Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It's Friday, March 18th, 2022. Today, as we do each week, we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW senior writer, joins me with his reporting and editorial analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
Spring arrives on Sunday in the Northern Hemisphere, and we are now one quarter of the way into 2022. You've noted the book business is going to be challenged to continue enjoying the high sales it's seen the last 2 years, Andrew. So was this a winter of content or discontent?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the news is mostly good, though print sales are down a bit to start the year. But as NPD's Kristen McLean noted in a recent report, it has been a decent start to 2022, with the numbers hewing pretty close to historical norms through the month of February. Now, as I said, yes, print sales for trade books did tail off in February on the order of about 4-5%, according to NPD. But as McLean notes, this wasn't unexpected, and our listeners will recall that 2021 got off to a red-hot start. And I think what is worth keeping an eye on as the year unfolds is whether 2022 can stay sort of in the ballpark with 2020 and 2021 in terms of combined sales, you know, 2021 for much of the year, and certainly at the start of the year, which is blazing. And for much of 2020, sales were hot too. But I think what we want to see is whether 2022 can, even if sales dip from a really strong year or last year, whether those sales can stay at this new sort of level. Remember, prior to the pandemic, a good year for publishers was any growth at all, right? On the order of 1% to 3%, well, that was just fine in previous years. But in the last 2 years, we have seen total growth on the order of about 20%. So if it tails off a bit from 20%, you're still okay, right? As long as we don't see a trend suggesting that publishers are going to give back a lot of the growth that they piled up in the last 2 years, we're okay. And we haven't seen that so far. At the top of 2022, just with 2 months of data in, combined format sales put 2022 within the top three starts of the last decade, McLean says. That's if you control for the outlier that was the hot start to 2021. And I'll say this too, adult fiction sales continue to be very strong, which is fantastic news. And printing velocity, you know, how much printing that we're doing and how fast matched 2013, which was the highest year on record. So that's good news as well, although that could be an issue, which we will get to in a minute.
So print velocity, this is velocity of content. It all fits together. As you say, we'll get to that in just a minute. But some more numbers. The Association of American Publishers has released their sales report for January.
Yeah, so the AAP StatShot program, which is based on reports from 1,368, I think, reporting publishers, actually showed a slight increase for January 2022 for adult books. Overall, kids' books and K-12 sales put industry sales up as a total industry. But, you know, in terms of adult books, they inched up just a little bit, 0.6%, so just under 1%. Over January 2021. But again, when you look at the hot start that January 2021 offered, you have to see that as an excellent performance. It's going to be interesting, of course, to see what the February figures show when they're released. But suffice it to say, we are probably, as expected, coming back to earth a bit in the first few months of 2022. To be expected after 2 years of stratospheric growth. And I'll just say it again, if publishers can stay sort of leveled up, if we can stay in the ballpark of that 20% that we gained over the last 2 years, I don't think anyone's going to be complaining.
Right. So let's get to that intriguing notion of print velocity, Andrew. In 2022, the year of the supply chain, publishing is under pressure to maintain its print levels in the face of limited printing capacity and a paper shortage. This is something Jim Milliot has written about for PW in last week's issue.
Yeah, as Jim noted in his report last week, it's not even spring yet, but you know the expected printing crunch that we've been talking about off and on this show for the last year or so, it appears to be in full swing, and it's a real concern. Publishers face a few challenges when it comes to printing and supply chain issues, but in the printing issue, they're facing both a lack of workers and a lack of paper. Indeed, there is a severe shortage of paper right now, and all of this is really hamstringing publishers. A number of independent publishers have already reported that they're finding it extremely difficult, if not next to impossible, to find printing time as far ahead as July and October of this year. To help the book business get a better handle on what's going on in the printing world, the Book Manufacturers Institute has begun a new monthly survey of its members to assess capacity and lead times for both softcover and hardcover books. And the results of the first survey were released last week. And as expected, as reported by my boss, Jim Milliot, it indicates that press availability is at a premium. For books, printers said that they're currently running at more than 80% capacity, which is very high. And the average lead time for a completed hardcover book is now 84 days. And that is going to be a really big headache for publishers as they try to manage getting their new books out on schedule and to keep their backlist books in stock.
So one question we have to ask, Andrew, is whether digital books could pick up this slack.
Yeah, that is the question, right? And you know, I don't think it's a simple one. I know Kristen McLean in her report alluded to an opportunity here for ebooks. But you know, while ebooks sort of ticked up in the first year of the pandemic, they came back to earth with a thud towards the end of 2022, and they continue to slouch back to, let's say, the corner the publishers decided to put them in. And you know, ebooks pretty much have given back their pandemic gains, or at least are heading that way. I think the AAP had ebook sales down again in January of 2022 on the order of like 11%. Anyway, the trend line for ebooks is clearly pointing down. But the question is whether ebook sales can sort of pick up the slack for print books if print shortages start to present a real problem for publishers in 2022. And I don't know the answer to that. All I can say is that it's probably going to be tricky. You know, I think it's funny how in the early days of the ebook, publishers expected ebook sales were going to be taking up a larger share of their sales. So no one really batted an eye when printers started closing and consolidating with greater speed and we started moving more printing abroad. And remember, too, when I say, you know, the corner publishers put ebooks in, I'm referring to the major publishers' approach to ebooks, which, you know, in 2010 was to sort of treat them as competitors to their print books, right? Remember Marcus Dole from Penguin Random House, you know, celebrating this new 80-20 print-to-digital equilibrium that had emerged by 2017, because a lot of people thought that it was going to be, you know, 20% print and 80% digital. And when it in fact turned out to be 80% print to digital, well, that was cause for celebration. But that didn't just happen, right? Publishers made that happen. And the question now really is, do you want to make ebooks more attractive again to tide you through this blip in the printing landscape or not? Or can you? I mean, I think it's all going to be very tricky. You know, for one, trade ebook prices, I just have to say, I know many people will agree with me, they're just too high. Ebooks at the price that they're at now for frontlist books are just not seen as a good value. But if you drop your prices, then can you win back some readers to ebooks? Probably can't. But again, that's a balancing act, because the reason we set ebook prices high in the first place is so they won't eat into print sales. And also, we have to look at the economy right now too, especially with rampant inflation. Switching to ebooks to offset delays in the print market, that's not going to be an easy strategy to execute. Families who are struggling to fill the gas tank right now and who are paying, you know, $10 for a gallon of milk are still going to find it hard to drop $15 on an ebook. So I'm just going to say this. Publishers have done a great job managing supply chain challenges for the last 2 years. A heroic job, I'd say. So let's just see how they manage this latest little crisis with printers, because I think we may be surprised. I think we may see that there's some creative solutions around this and they get through it okay. But I'm also doubtful that with life starting to get back to normal, the readers who have been able to indulge their love of print books in astonishing numbers, frankly, over the last 2 years, are suddenly going to be happy going back to reading on their phones.
And this week, President Joe Biden signed the fiscal year 2022 federal budget. Librarians are telling us they are disappointed with the numbers on their side. Tell us why.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a surprise, because after about 8 years of solid federal funding increases for libraries, library leaders say they're actually really discouraged with the fiscal year 22 budget that was signed into law last week by President Biden. And they say they're gearing up for what they see as a challenging 2023 funding push as well. As for that budget, it was signed into law on March 11th by President Biden. This is the reconciled fiscal year 2022 budget, which, of course, we've been surviving on continuing resolutions for a while. This budget goes back to October 1 of 2021. And that budget only contained flat funding for the Library Services and Technology Act, the LSTA, in at about $197.4 million. And yes, that's a million with an M, not billions. It's a paltry sum in the scheme of a $1.5 trillion overall spending bill. But what's especially disappointing, I think, is that the House last summer for this year's, for the 2022 bill, had actually approved a $9 million increase to LSTA, and the Senate stripped that out in the final bill, and President Biden signed it. LSTA, I should remind our listeners, is the sole source, the primary source at least, of federal funding dedicated to America's libraries, and it's administered through grants to states from the IMLS. ALA President Patty Wong in a statement noted that with inflation rising above 7%, level funding is just not enough for libraries to maintain their current programming and facilities, let alone meet the ever-increasing demand and cost for library services. She says that libraries made it through the pandemic okay, and the funding helped, but with people emerging out of the pandemic, the challenges are as great, if not greater than ever. Libraries are busier than they've ever been. They have all kinds of new rules and realities to deal with. Now is just not the time to pull back federal funding for libraries and library workers. So I have to say, it's hard to say what happened here. You know, libraries have really done well, as I said, for 8 straight years. This despite President Trump threatening to eliminate the IMLS for all those years. In fact, Congress responded by giving them huge increases. But librarians remain hopeful that the 2023 budget blueprint, the proposal which the president usually issues around this time, librarians are hopeful that that's going to offer better news for the future. Still, ALA officials were blunt. The fiscal year 2022 final budget is a warning sign for the library community. They're going to have to ramp up their advocacy efforts, and they better get going now, because 2023 figures to be a very tough midterm election year.
And next week, Andrew, you travel to Portland, Oregon for the Public Library Association Conference.
Yeah, my first work trip in over 2 years, I'm happy to say. And I'm pretty excited to see people face to face again. And I think this comes at an important time. You know, when I return from Portland, I'll catch you all up on the experience. You know, I've also been back in the PW offices now for 2 weeks. So, you know, the world still feels a million miles away from any kind of normal right now. So, you know, it's hard to say that I feel hopeful about anything, but this does feel like a small step in the right direction. In the meantime, you can read about PLA on the PW website at the end of next week, and I'll look forward to telling you all about it when I return.
All right, then. So have a great trip. Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks for joining me today on the program.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, the U.S.-based Audio Publishers Association reported audiobook revenue rose in 2020 to $1.3 billion, a 12% hike and the ninth straight year of double-digit growth for the format. However, only a fraction of published book titles are commercially available as audiobooks. Synthetic voices created by machines and algorithms could address the audiobook deficit quickly and inexpensively, says publishing consultant Bill Wolfstahl. For now, though, Amazon stands in the way with a policy prohibiting AI-generated voices from reading texts on its Audible platform.
2 or 3 years ago, if you listened to synthetic narration, it sounded like Siri or Stephen Hawking, very robotic. But in the last 2 or 3 years, great improvements have been made. And listening to an audiobook with synthetic narration is really an enjoyable experience. And I believe that Audible and Amazon are going to change that policy once they realize that it was put in place to protect their consumers. And their consumers don't want protection. They want choice. If you're going to spend money to create an audiobook, will you get a return on that investment? And up till now, even though you could create audiobooks for $2,000 or $3,000, most good, high-quality audiobooks with a first-rate narrator cost between $5,000 and $10,000 to create. And if you're spending that kind of money as a publisher, you have to sell enough books to get that money back, and up till now, it's been impossible. So creating books with synthetic narration for much less, for $500 or $1,000, means for publishers they're taking much less of a risk and have a greater chance of getting their money back.
Talking up synthetic narration for audiobooks, coming on the next CCC podcast. Our producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts, and please do follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening. Join us again soon for another Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.